This is Waterloo, Iowa, right? Please kill Joey first.
Are you sure it's down this road, Ned?
Joey, he's insane. Let's just ditch him and leave.
Good old perfect Joey. Come on, Ryan Dean, give the guy a break.
A few hours ago, I was sitting in this same spot while Megan was grabbing my butt and Annie was playing footsie with me. I think I'll kill the asshole in the back seat first.
Somewhere out in the Pacific, a migrating gray whale pauses.
Holy Mother of God, that hurts my fucking ears.
Then during econ, I started coughing pretty bad and excused myself so I could leave to get a drink. That's when Megan followed me out, and I didn't even know it until I was bent over the drinking fountain and felt her cool hand rubbing the back of my neck. I'm not going to lie, it felt pretty goddamn nice. Think about Annie. Think about Annie.
Are you okay, Ryan Dean?
I stood up and turned around.
I wiped my mouth with my shirt sleeve.
I don't know, I said. Me and JP got in a pretty bad fight this morning. I think I'm going to get in big trouble. I busted his face, and to top it off, I'm pretty sick. She just looked at me with those half-scolding, half-sympathetic, totally hot Megan Renshaw eyes and brushed my hair back with her hand. I knew she was going to kiss me, too. Think about Annie. Think about Annie. I turned my face away. I can't do this anymore, Megan. We have to quit doing this. I walked back to class. I felt even worse. And then I felt like dying when Megan came in. She was crying. I put my head down on my desk. Joey knew what was going on. I am such a loser. Chapter 76. Okay. Being in class with Megan was pretty awkward. But it was nothing like how I felt when I saw JP walk into American Literature. I'd practically run there so I could see Annie before anything happened. I was convinced that JP wouldn't show up, that someone would come in to escort me to the headmaster's office for what I'd done. So I wanted to at least see Annie one more time before getting arrested or kicked out of Pine Mountain. She was already sitting down when I got there. I dropped my bag onto the floor beside my desk and practically collapsed in the seat beside her. "Hey," she said. Her eyes looked so warm and happy. "I thought you'd stay home today. How are you, Ryan Dean?"
"I'll be honest, Annie," I said. "I am terrible. But I just needed to see you today."
"I'm glad." And she leaned over just slightly into the space between us, like we were playing that game that got us both so frustrated over the weekend. So I leaned a little closer, too.
"You look amazing," I said.
"And this is the first morning since Friday I can look at you and not have to keep one eye out for a horny gay pug." She laughed. We squeezed hands in the space between our desks. That's when I knew everything was okay. And that's when JP walked in and saw us. He looked terrible. The bridge of his nose was swollen and red all the way across from eye to eye. His left eye had a big black bruise that slashed down toward his cheek, and his upper lip puffed out like he'd been stung by a bee. I wanted to look away when he came in because of the way he was glaring at me, but I thought that would seem too much like backing down, so I kept my eyes fixed right on his. I'll admit that I was pretty scared. It really felt like we were going to fight again right then and there in front of Mr. Wellens. And that old pervert would be even more convinced that everything just boils down to sex, I guess.
"JP, what happened to you?"
Annie was surprised, but her voice still had that tone to it like nothing bad could ever happen. I started coughing, and JP stared at me as he sat down on the other side of Annie.
"Nothing," he said. "Rugby? Just playing too hard with the boys."
He said it without blinking, looking past Annie, and I knew exactly what J.P. meant by the boy's comment.
"Hey, now you won't need a mask for Halloween," I said.
Annie gave me a scolding look, but those eyes, they were always smiling when she looked at me. I knew I was going a little too far with J.P., but I didn't feel bad about it. I wanted him to know that I wasn't going to give up, that he'd have to first. So then I really messed with him. I said, "Sorry about that, J.P.," and I held my hand out to shake, right in front of Annie's face, and I looked at J.P. like nothing in the world had ever happened out there at the turnaround by the lake. I held my hand there, open. J.P. wouldn't take it. I shrugged and pulled it back. Score. "I just kicked your ass for the second time today, buddy." Then Mr. Wellens began with his blah, 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 Nick Adams's father brutalizes the Indian woman almost like he's having sex in front of his son and to humiliate and castrate the woman's husband. So it was no passing time. "Annie, did you see that? What J.P. did? Whatever. Love, Ryan Dean."
"Yeah. Don't talk about it, remember? Love, A.A.
I get my stitches out today.
Nice. I think they look sexy."
"You never said that to me before."
"Oh, well. They'll be gone tomorrow, and so will the sexy. Ha ha ha."
I bet he'd be happy to split my head open again. Ha ha.
"Stop it."
"Okay. Sorry. Sawmill."
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"Nothing. Will you meet me at Stonehenge today after I get my stitches out? That way you can see if it really is possible for Ryan Dean West to lose the sexy."
"You are perverted."
"Will you? Please?"
"Okay."
"Even if it's raining?"
"You shouldn't go out in the rain. You're sick."
"Say you will."
"Okay."
"Okay. See you there. Promise. R.D.
Chapter 77. I could not believe it. Her name was Hickey. She leaned over me, so close her breath tickled the hairs on my eyebrow as she looked at the stitches there. My eyes just kind of naturally fixed straight ahead to the points of her boobs, which is when I noticed her name tag, D.L. Hickey, R.N. And I thought, what an awesome name. Of course, I also tried to make up as many perverted words beginning with D and L that I could stick before a hickey. Does love, delivers luscious, daringly lewd, delightfully located. And I was on about the 17th set, sweating in my collar when she said,
"Are you hot, Ryan Dean?"
Which almost made me start hiccuping again.
"Just a little.
Here."
Nurse Hickey loosened my tie and unfastened my shirt's top buttons. Any more of that treatment and those stitches would have popped out by themselves.
"Why don't you lie back here and I'll get those right out."
I put my head down on the paper-covered pillow on the bed and stared up as she snipped and pulled those stitches from my head one by one.
"There," she said. "All perfectly handsome again."
Then she brushed her fingertip across the line over my eyebrow.
Whew, it was official.
I could have asked her to write a note for Annie. Ryan Dean West did not lose the sexy. I couldn't move. Something behind my zipper would definitely have broken if I did. When she finished, she put her scissors and tweezers things down on a metal tray beside the bed and began scribbling something on my patient chart. And she got this puzzled look, and she turned toward me, half smiling.
"You were in here 2 days in a row last week?"
I was," she said.
"Your chart says you came in with a laceration on your scrotum."
Oh, God, they actually write stuff like that down? Scrotum? What a ridiculous word. If I ever became a doctor, I swore to myself then and there I would legitimize the use of the word ballsack.
Oh. I cleared my throat. I felt like I was going to pass out. Yes.
From rugby?
And then I realized, score. I was getting Nurse Hickey to talk about my balls. What could be better than that?
Have you ever thought about going out for the tennis team instead?
I love rugby, Nurse Hickey. Hickey? God damn it. Hiccups.
And how's that healing up?
Whoa. Opportunity of a pathetic lifetime. So I said, I think it's kind of bothering me.
Here.
She set my chart down on the tray.
Stand up and drop your pants.
I love America. Dreams do come true here. Okay, I'll be honest. She actually did tell me to stand up and drop my pants, which made it a milestone in my life, being that Nurse Hickey was a smoking 5 out of 5 toothless one-eyed hillbillies on the Ryan Dean West Drop Your Pants Boy tote board. Better still, she was now the 3rd female with such a rating to make that demand of me in the past few days, counting Annie and Doc Mom when they were fixing my trousers. Well, needless to say, standing was a bit, problematic for a couple reasons. Probably the least of which was the woozy head rush I got when my feet hit the floor. But I bravely did as Nurse Hickey asked. Unbuckled and unzipped, my pants went to my shoes, and then she laughed and said,
"Are those Pokemon?"
Oops, I forgot. Well, they were comfy.
How cute.
I felt myself turning red. What a loser. I lifted up my shirt tails, stuck my thumbs in my waistband, pulled, and...
Hold on there, hotshot,
Nurse Hickey said.
Keep them up for just a minute. Dr. Norris will be right in.
Then she turned around and walked out of the examination room.
No! I knew I deserved it, but come on!
I am such a pathetic loser. Chapter 78. Okay, I need to vent. So, after the lengthy and serious talk Dr. No Gloves gave me about how it's perfectly normal for boys to get overly scared when they receive a catastrophic fucking penis injury, but that everything would be just fine, and I should try to think of it in the same way I'd think about getting a cut on my elbow, which most boys normally don't even think twice about, but my elbow isn't my penis, you moron, so just stop worrying, Ryan Dean, there is nothing wrong. Except Dr. No Gloves got it all wrong about how the setup to the ball sack exam that Nurse D.L. Hickey was supposed to do happened in the first place, and oh, I should probably start wearing boxer shorts instead of little boy tidy Pokemon fucking briefs, because my body was changing, and I would begin to appreciate the growing space, and if I ever needed to talk to him about these kinds of things, since my dad lived in fucking Boston, he'd be there for me, bare hands and all. I took my embarrassed, skinny, but now up to 157 pounds after Dr. No Gloves insisted on weighing me since I was fucking naked anyway, bitch-assed self out of that innermost circle of hell as fast as possible so I could take a quick shower to wash that bastard's old spice smell off my scrotum and wait for Annie at Stonehenge. Ugh. Okay. I'm breathing again. Chapter 79. It was actually nice to be in O'Hall when it was so quiet. All the guys were at either rugby or football practice. I laughed to myself thinking about Casey Palmer being gay. But then I didn't think it was funny that Joey was gay. I guess it was because Casey was such a poser with his sexuality. But probably a lot of guys were. Who knew? There was another FedEx package sitting on my bunk when I got to my room. My mom came through. I was a little worried about opening the box, though, because at this point I didn't know what to expect from her. Nice. She'd sent the size 10.5 Nikes that I asked for, and in the box with them she'd added a can of shaving cream, a razor, and some Chanel aftershave cologne. I guess she had a mother's intuition about that one whisker on my chin. I found an index card in there, too. On one side, my mother wrote, "Ryan Dean, I hope I recognize you next time I see you. I love you and miss you, Mom." And on the other side, in my dad's writing, "Son, you're growing up, my man. I know you've seen me do this enough times that you won't cut the shit out of your face. Mom would be pissed at me for not sending you a book called How to Shave for the First Time. Ha ha. Love, Dad." Yeah, my dad talked like that. So I showered, and I actually shaved, too, and put on some of that cologne. I gelled my hair. Oh, I also switched out of the Pokemon briefs, and I did realize there was a lot to be said for having that growing room down there, like Dr. No Gloves told me, but I still intended to wear them on Halloween under my Wild Boy of Bainbridge Island loincloth, growing room or not, just to keep things, put away. I put on those brand new Nikes and my nicest black and blue sideline warm-up suit from my rugby team gear, then headed downstairs before any of the other guys even made it back from practice. But in the stairwell, I ran right into something even worse than Dr. No Gloves' nutsack exam and puberty pep talk, if there could be such a degree of miserableness. Just as I opened the door from the boys' floor, I stumbled onto Mr. Farrow and that freakishly unhot witch from downstairs, Mrs. Singer. Together. Standing at the landing on the tenantless girls' floor, they were kissing. And it wasn't one of those innocent, "Oh, hello, you frosty and cadaverous old hag from downstairs, so nice to see you this afternoon," pecks on the cheek, either. It was all tonguing and moaning and noisy, and Mrs. Singer was wearing only a bathrobe, and it burns my eyes even now to admit that I noticed it, but she didn't have anything on underneath it, and it sears the very depth of my soul to confess it, but I knew they must have just had sex. Or something. I think I screamed. Like Ned. Okay, I'll be honest, I didn't scream, but for whatever reason, they both instantly radared in on me, standing above them. "Ryan Dean," Mr. Farrow said, pushing himself away from the creature and nonchalantly combing a trembling hand through his wild just-had-sex hair. I noticed the fresh shine of saliva in the corner of his mouth, and his glasses were crooked. Apparently, they weren't in on the doctor's appointment early return day for Ryan Dean West. And I'm going to get a little sidetracked here, but I was totally convinced that Mr. Farrow was completely gay. Go figure. I guess he was attracted to corpses and decay and not just to boys. Then Mrs. Singer looked up at me, but I was too crafty for her. I kept my eyes fixed straight down on the floor until she left, and I heard the door close behind her. So it was just me and Mr. Farrow. Like, super awkward. I kind of wanted to laugh. I wondered if he had a mom who'd sent him a How to Have Sex the First Time with a Cadaverous Hag from Hell leaflet. Farrow began coming up the stairs toward me. There was no way out. "Did you skip practice today, Ryan Dean?" he asked. And he moved and talked all calm and slow like a murderer. A murderer who had just had sex with a cadaverous hag from Hell. I pointed to my eye. "I was at the doctor's, got my stitches out today." "Oh." He leaned close. He didn't need to. He could see perfectly fine from where he was. He smelled like sweat. "It looks good." "Thanks. Well, bye." I started to slip past him. "Ryan Dean?" I froze. "Please, don't say anything about this." What a creepy child molester thing to say. Then Mr. Farrow said, "I can transfer you back into the boys' dorm at the 10-week grade report in 2 weeks. I didn't say anything. The door off the mudroom opened and Joey and Kevin came in. "Hey," Joey said. He stopped and looked at me, then he high-fived me. Not a record breaker, but a solid one nevertheless. "Nice job on the stitches. And damn, Ryan Dean, You look about 2 inches taller than yesterday. And he laughed. My ears are still ringing from screaming Ned. That was almost the worst thing I ever had to put up with, I said. But I thought not even close to what I just saw about a minute ago.
Hey, Kevin said.
He had a rugby ball tucked inside a sling.
Nice hair, Winger. Let me guess, Annie?
And Kevin leaned close to my face and sniffed, then said, Ooh. I said, Yeah. And they kept going upstairs. I lowered my voice.
I don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Farrow. Say something about what?
Then Mr. Farrow nodded like we were striking some kind of deal, but we weren't. Because I thought about it right then. Yeah, I didn't like Chaz Becker. I hated him, in fact. And some of the other guys in O'Hall were real dipshits, and the communal bathroom was always nasty and crowded, and bunk beds are for prisons. But I knew I couldn't go back to the boys' dorm.
Please don't transfer me out of O'Hall, Mr. Farrow, I said. I'd get in too much trouble. If I went back to my old room, I'd be kicked out of school the first day, and I'm not going to say why, but you just have to believe me. Please?
And yeah, I was doing the think about peeing face on him.
Well, then, he said.
The door opened. Casey and Chaz came up the stairs toward us. Chaz was saying something to Casey about how she's been crying all goddamn day long. But I avoided looking at them. I knew what he was talking about anyway. Still, I had to wonder what Chaz would say if he knew he was pouring his lovesick heart out to a gay guy with the serious hots for the fly half on our rugby team. I passed them on my way down, and when I glanced back over my shoulder, Mr. Farrow was gone, and the stairwell was empty. At the bottom, I saw Mrs. Singer watching me through the window on the door to the girls' floor. Then she turned away and the window was empty. It actually made me shudder. I stopped just before going outside and pressed myself up against the girls' door.
My name is Ryan Dean West, I said.
My voice cracked, loser.
I'm the boy you caught down here in the bathroom that first night before school started. I just wanted to say I'm sorry and ask you to please stop doing all these horrible things to me.
The door cracked open, and I could see just a bit of her so unhot she looked like screaming Ned after a close-shave face. Mrs. Singer said,
I'm going to cook you and eat you on Halloween, Ryan Dean West.
Then I ran. Okay, to be perfectly honest, she probably said, Nice to meet you, Ryan Dean West. But I did my duty by apologizing, and I wasn't about to stick around and have my soul sucked, receive a cascade of ice shards pouring through the fly of my boxers, come down with diarrhea, suffer a spontaneous bloody nose, or have her lay another ungodly curse on my as-yet-untested reproductive appliances either. Chapter 80 Annie was already at Stonehenge when I got there. She walked along the wishing circle path, and I stood back at the edge of the trees and watched her. The nurse said for me to tell you that I did not lose the sexy. She said there's way too much of it going on there. She looked at me and laughed.
Let me see it, she said.
Another Ryan Dean West would have undoubtedly made a perverted comeback to that. But somehow I just felt different standing there. She walked over to me, and I could see her eyeing me up and down, but I watched her face. I leaned close. Game on, Annie. She put her thumb on the small scar.
Well?
I asked.
Okay, she said. You look good dressed like that. And the way you fixed your hair, Ryan Dean. You look taller.
That's when I realized that Annie had completely stopped calling me West. I thought it meant something, and I liked it.
You're the second person to say that, Annie. I think I'm going to have to come over and have you and your mom fix my pants again. Do you want to come back?
Oh, my God, Annie, I'd leave right now if I could. I'd start walking.
Annie said,
Maybe you can come over for the 4 days over Thanksgiving.
That would be awesome, I said,
even though I knew it would make my mom and dad unhappy that I wasn't going home. I held her hand, and we walked under the trees. It was beginning to rain again, but none of it fell through.
What were you wishing for?
I said.
Not going to tell you.
Okay.
I inhaled. On the walk out here, I'd thought about what I needed to tell her. It was important, and I knew I had to stop acting like such a, wild boy.
I need to tell you something, though, Annie. Me and JP got in another fight today. That's why his eye was black. I punched him. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do it again. I don't want you to get mad about it, so I told you before you heard it from Shawnee or someone else. I don't know why I've been acting so stupid.
Annie sighed.
Brian Dean. I know, I'm sorry. And I decided I can't be upset about you going to the dance with him either. I'm just going to have to forget about it. I'm really sorry, Annie. Will you forgive me for being such a jerk?
She stood right in front of me, so close we were practically touching. We just looked at each other's eyes, and I knew we were going to kiss. But she pulled back and said,
I can't be in love with you, Ryan Dean.
Yeah, I heard that before, and this time I wasn't going to be a baby about it and run away, so I said,
Yes, you can be.
For the longest time, it seemed like there was no sound at all except the rain dripping through the trees above us. I said it again.
Yes, you can be, Annie.
And she said,
I know. I know too, because I've never said this to anyone, but I am so in love with you, Annie, that I almost can't stand it. And it's making me insane.
Then I don't know if she laughed or was going to cry, but she kind of shook, and she put both of her hands on my shoulders and said,
I do love you, Ryan Dean.
And then we just about collapsed into each other's arms. I felt so relieved. I closed my eyes and inhaled, and we kissed like we did that other day in the sawmill, and neither of us would let go. It was better than every wish I ever made coming true all at the same time.
You smell nice, she said.
I shaved.
She laughed.
Why? Hey, now. We walked through the forest, heading back toward O'Hall along the trail by the lake. It was getting late, and I needed to change back into my dress clothes or they wouldn't let me have dinner. I didn't care, though. Everything was perfect, and I just wanted to sleep. But it was so exciting to think about sitting down to dinner with Annie for the first time as a real, honest-to-God couple. I wanted so badly to be alone with her. Annie said,
Oh my God, I am in love with a 14-year-old boy.
Get over it, old hag. When you're 90, I'll be 88. Chapter 81. Everything in my universe changed that day. Annie left me at O'Hall. We promised to meet for dinner in half an hour. I watched her walk away, and after every few steps she'd turn around and see me following her with my eyes, and she'd say, Go on, Ryan Dean, get dressed. But I watched her until I couldn't see her anymore. I went inside. I could hear the guys upstairs noisily getting ready to storm the mess hall. I paused beside the girl's door and looked through the window to see if Mrs. Singer was there. For some stupid reason, I wanted to say thanks to her, like she'd lifted the curse or cast some love spell over Annie. I know, that was dumb. I pushed the door open and stuck my head inside. The hallway was dark,
but I saw Mrs. Singer standing at the far end, just staring at me. She looked like Mary Todd Lincoln, and not just because she had the big black dress thing going on. I mean, she really looked like someone dug up the corpse of Mary Todd Lincoln 15 minutes ago and propped her up at the end of the O'Hall girls' floor hallway. I said, "Thanks," and slipped back upstairs. Chapter 82. Shawnee and J.P. didn't sit near us at dinner that night. It didn't matter to me. Annie and I played feet under the table. We hardly ate anything at all because we just stared at each other, and I could tell it started to annoy Joey and Isabel that we were so focused in our own thing. It was like the rest of our friends didn't exist. The next couple of days were kind of like that. Mine and Annie's universe got smaller and quieter. Shawnee didn't say much to me. I know he was mad about my starting that fight with J.P. at the lake, and how Shawnee had to take some punches himself when he got between us. J.P. had long since stopped talking to me, and Megan just moped around like she was so depressed. Yeah, she didn't talk to me either. Oh, and neither did Chaz. Ever since last Sunday night, and the consequence, and screaming Ned, and me making Chaz cry when I confessed that Megan and I had been fooling around. He didn't even put forth the effort to call me Puss Boy or Ass Wing anymore. Nothing. Joey told me that Megan had broken up with Chaz, and it was all because of me. So if I threw in the fact that I'd caught Mrs. Singer and Mr. Farrow practically copulating right there in the O'Hall stairwell, I figured all I'd need to do was publicly out Casey Palmer, then the entire state of Oregon, minus Annie Altman and Joey Cosentino, would want me dead. I was on thin ice, but I didn't care. Chapter 83. The day before Halloween, we had another rugby match. We played at our own field on Wednesday after classes, so Annie got to be there. Our opposition was a club team from Southern California called the Pumas that had come up on tour to play against teams in the Pacific Northwest, where everyone knows we play a tougher game. None of us really liked playing against club teams. They were notorious cheaters as far as things like player eligibility were concerned, and most club coaches' only priority was winning, so they'd do anything unethical to get there. Coach M knew it, too, but it was preseason and we all wanted to play anyway. Besides that, Southern California, give me a break. Saying you play rugby in Southern California is like saying you surf in Colorado. Dude. But they were tough, and that's probably because, to me, it looked like they had some players who had been out of high school for a couple years and were married and had mortgages and tattoos and children of their own. We ended up beating them pretty badly, though, 42-12. And the coolest thing was that Coach M said he wasn't going to let anyone wear Kevin's number for the rest of the season. Kevin stayed on the sidelines wearing the number 4 jersey with his arm in a sling. That's probably what pumped us up the most for the game, even though I knew half the guys on the team didn't want to talk to me, much less give me the ball. Joey did, though, and I scored one time. But Joey was on fire that day and put in 3 tries by himself. The boys on the other team got pretty hot-headed, and a couple times it looked like they were going to try to start fighting, but we kept it under control and had a good game of it. Their coach ended up in such a bad mood, though, that he made them leave the social early and get back on their bus to head up to Seattle. That was fine with me because we all got out of there early enough to give me hope that I'd catch up to Annie in the mess hall before we had to check in at our dorms. It was dark, and I was afraid she'd already gone home for the night, so as soon as I could, I took off running for the mess hall, and J.P. was right behind me. "Hey, fucker," J.P. said. I knew he was there. I stopped and turned around. It was so quiet and cold. There was no one else around, and I could just barely hear the sounds of the students who were still having dinner in the mess hall. "I'm not going to fight about it anymore, J.P.," I said. "It doesn't matter." "Screw you, Ryan Dean." "Look, I didn't mean it when I said I was sorry the other day, but I do now. I'm sorry, J.P. J.P. didn't answer.
We might as well just find some other way to waste our time because trust me, it's over, I said.
Fuck you.
This would have been a perfect time and place for him to absolutely kill me, and I knew it. Trouble is, I'm pretty sure he did too. Oh well, I thought I'd gotten my shots in on JP enough in the past week, and I was way ahead on the scorecard. Worst of all, I knew I deserved it.
You want to punch me, JP?
I put my hands out. Go ahead.
I told you I'm not going to fight you anymore, and I meant it.
Just then Shawnee came up from behind, totally out of the dark. He was out of breath from running after us.
What are you guys doing?
JP walked off without answering, straight for the boys' dorm.
What the fuck, Ryan Dean? We used to all be friends. What the fuck?
Shawnee was pissed again. He turned away, following JP.
Shawnee, I said. I didn't do anything this time, I swear to God.
I followed after him.
Shawnee, listen to me, just a second.
But he wouldn't stop. So I just let him go. Chapter 84. I couldn't sleep that night. I just lay there on the top bunk and stared up at the emptiness between me and the ceiling, thinking about what Shawnee had said, how we all used to be friends, and how his voice had a tone in it like he blamed me for doing something that I don't think was entirely under my control. This time, I listened to Chaz sleeping and wondered how I'd managed to live this long sharing a room with him. I wanted to ask him about Megan, but I knew those would likely be the final words spoken on this earth by Ryan Dean West. For 3 days, Chaz hadn't said one word to me, but Megan looked so sad and it made me feel terrible, because deep down I didn't see her as just some hot girl. I really did like her. I really did think she was a great person. I just knew better than to get too close to her again.
Ryan Dean West, too.
Did you actually just say that to yourself, that you don't see Megan Renshaw as just some hot girl?
Ryan Dean West, 1.
I can't help it. Something's changing in me.
Ryan Dean West, 2.
Oh, so you finally did decide to join Team Joey.
Ryan Dean West, 1.
That's a shitty thing to say.
Ryan Dean West, 2.
How about Isabel? Isn't she fuzzy hot?
Ryan Dean West, 1.
Shut up.
Ryan Dean West, 2.
Doc Mom, Mrs. Kurtz, aren't they my best friend's kinky mom hot?
Ryan Dean West, 1.
Ugh.
Ryan Dean West, 2.
How about Annie?
Ryan Dean West, 1.
If you weren't me, I'd punch you in the face.
Ryan Dean West, 2.
Nurse Hickey?
Ryan Dean West, 1.
Okay, I'll give you that. Nurse Hickey is a hissing 5 out of 5 leaky air conditioning units on the Ryan Dean West Global Hotness Scale.
Ryan Dean West, 2.
My man, there is hope for you after all.
Ryan Dean West, 1 wipes the sweat from his forehead. Ryan Dean West, 2. Loser.
I couldn't stand it anymore. I had to get my wimpy, feeling sorry for myself ass out of bed. I slipped on my warm-ups and carried my shoes in one hand so I wouldn't squeak on the floor, and I left. In the dark hallway, I ran into Joey as he was coming out of the bathroom. He whispered,
"Are you leaving or something?
I have to go outside. I can't sleep.
Dude, I am so beat up from the game, I can't even lie down.
Let me get dressed and I'll meet you out there in a minute."
Okay.
I didn't feel awkward talking to Joey or being in a situation where we were alone together. And I know that's a crappy thing for me to even point out in the first place. Like I have to defend myself to myself for being best friends with a guy who happens to be gay. But most guys just got all tense around Joey in normal social situations. Like any time we weren't out on the pitch and bashing each other's brains in playing rugby. You could just see it in the way guys' shoulders would tighten up, and you could hear it in the way they'd talk. Like they never really talked directly to Joey, even if they were asking him something,
It always looked like they were talking past him, or to the ground or something, and in really short sentences. It's weird, but I noticed it. And I'm sure Joey did, too. I saw him come out from the mudroom, and he let the door close slowly behind him so it didn't make the slightest sound. Then he sat down on the steps and slipped his shoes on. "Where are you going?" he said. I shrugged.
"That witch downstairs didn't see you, did she?"
I said.
"Why are you so scared of her?"
We talked low until we were far enough away from O'Hall.
"Dude, Joey, she does horrible things to me, trust me. I know she's a witch or something."
Joey laughed.
"Whatever."
Then he said, "I asked Kevin to come, but once he's in bed, forget it. It hurts him too much to get in and out of bed anyway." Joey walked slowly and carefully. He limped. There really isn't too much in the world that hurts worse than a guy's body does the night after a rugby game, and the fly half almost always takes more shots than any other player on the field. I threw a rock out into the lake.
"I caught Mr. Farrow having sex with Mrs. Singer on Monday when I came back from having my stitches out. How nasty is that?"
Joey laughed.
"No fucking way."
"Dude, don't tell anyone. At least that's what Mr. Farrow begged me. That's why we were talking on the stairs when you and Kevin came in that day. He even said he'd get me out of O'Hall if I kept quiet about it."
"Are you going to do it?"
"I asked him not to," I said.
"I wouldn't last in the boys' dorm. JP hates me. I think Shawnee does now, too. It sucks."
"You push things too far sometimes, Ryan Dean. Just your luck."
"I know.
But shit, everyone knows you're a fighter. You're not afraid to take on anyone," Joey said.
"Oh, I'm afraid. But when you have to fight, you have to fight. There's nothing else you can do."
I threw another rock.
"Annie finally told me she's in love with me."
"Did you tell her first?"
"Yeah."
"Damn, you've got some guts, Ryan Dean."
"So, sorry if it seems like we've been ignoring everyone else."
"Dude, it's pretty obvious." Then Joey high-fived me, but it was weak, so we had to do it again. Not a record breaker, but it was solid.
"At least there's one thing I haven't totally screwed up," I said.
"Yeah."
"Damn, I thought Joey didn't have to agree with that.
But then again, Joey wasn't the kind of guy who'd ever lie about things just to make someone feel better." I sighed.
"Yeah. I feel terrible about JP and Shawnee. We used to be such good friends. But I couldn't handle him chasing after Annie like he's been doing. I should have known she didn't really care about him. Well, not like that, anyway. God, I am such an idiot. I wish I could just do it all over again. I wish I never got put in O'Hall in the first place. And now it's like I can't ever get out."
Joey threw a rock, too.
"Yep," he said. "You know, nothing ever goes back exactly the way it was. Things just expand and contract, like the universe, like breathing. But you'll never fill your lungs up with the same air twice. Sometimes it would be cool if you could pause and rewind and do over. But I think anyone would get tired of that after one or two times."
"Sometimes don't you just ever feel like screaming Ned?" I asked. Joey laughed out loud.
"Sometimes I feel like driving back to Bannock and finding him at that donut shop just so I can kick the shit out of him."
And I laughed too.
"That was one of the most amazing nights ever."
"Yeah." I felt better. We walked back to O'Hall and kicked off our shoes before opening the door and climbing upstairs. I was afraid we'd run into Mrs. Singer, but then I thought she just had this certain thing for zeroing in on me. So Joey was like a protective charm against her. I said goodnight and thanks, and we hugged. A guy hug, okay? With the padding on the back and stuff. And Joey slipped into his room. And as I was walking down the hallway to my room, I saw that Casey Palmer had been watching me. just standing in front of his door with his arms folded, like he was pissed off and wanted to fight. He whispered,
"That explains it. What were you guys out doing tonight, little fucking faggot?"
Man, I thought, you have some balls saying shit like that to anyone. I walked past where Casey was standing. Then I stopped and said,
"Don't be stupid, Palmer.
I fucking hate you queers.
I'm sick of all the shit Joey pulls around here. Someone needs to straighten his shit out."
Nick Matthews opened the door to their room and stepped out into the hallway, shirtless and wearing only his boxers. Nick was a fat offensive lineman with a tattoo of a skull on his hairy shoulder.
"We should fuck these little queers up like you said, Case."
I glanced back toward Joey's door. I wished he'd been there to hear what Nick and Casey said, but I was also glad he wasn't. It would have been a terrible fight right then and there. And I can't even explain how much I wanted to rip into Casey about what I knew and out him in front of his hairy tattooed roommate. But I literally bit down on my tongue and went to bed without saying another word. Chapter 85. Shawnee avoided me the whole next day. He wouldn't talk to me in conditioning or even at our team meeting at the end of the day. We didn't have practice on Halloween. Coach let us out early. Most of the guys on the team didn't live in O'Hall. That meant they were all going to the dinner party, while the O'Hall boys would be the only 12 kids eating in the mess hall and then going home. Alone. At least some of us had costumes. And I knew that Joey and Kevin were going to do whatever they could to make sure we all had something to laugh about that night. So I just tried not to think about what Annie was going to be doing without me. But, of course, that was like trying not to think about getting kicked in the balls right as you're watching that foot make contact. Things like this were really the worst part of being assigned to O'Hall, because as Joey, Kevin, and I left the mess hall after our quiet dinner, we could all hear the sound of the music coming from the activities center. And I'm not going to lie about it, but even though Annie and I had made our commitment to each other, the sound of that music was eating me up on the walk back to my room. I didn't say anything to Joey about running into Casey the night before. I probably should have, now that I think about it. But at the time, I just thought it would make Joey want to fight him. But when we got back to O'Hall, and we saw the painfully unhot Mary Todd Mrs. Singer standing on the stairs, which was the first time I'd ever seen Mrs. Singer in the presence of any of the other guys, so I was a little relieved to finally know she was real, I found out something that was almost unbelievable.
"Mr. Farrow is not here this evening," she said. "He's left me in charge."
Which, I thought, meant she actually was going to cook me and eat me.
"I don't care what you boys do. Just stay off my floor and keep the noise down, and none of us will get into trouble, correct?"
I looked at Kevin and Joey. They heard it too. So to me, the "I don't care what you boys do" part was as good as a permission slip for us to go to the dance. The wild boy of Bainbridge Island was ready to break free. We ran upstairs to dig out the costumes.
"I think she killed Mr. Farrow," I said. "Or she's got him chained to her bed."
Then Kevin said, "Maybe we should have stalled her a little longer to give him a chance to finish chewing off his arm then." Chapter 86. So there I was, standing in the middle of the floor, wearing absolutely nothing but those Pokemon briefs, when the door pushed open and Chaz and Casey walked in. Chaz just stared at me and shook his head.
"What?"
I said. But it really did creep me out the way Casey looked at me, especially considering what I knew about him, and what he obviously thought about me and Joey, too. God, that was all I needed after the crap I'd been through that week, to have some angry, horny, gay football player chasing after me or jealously thinking I'd been having sex with the guy he was attracted to. Casey Palmer was a dangerous psychopath.
"Your costumes are there in the cubby," I said. "Have fun. You're going to like what we got."
Joey and I had left a bag marked Chaz and one marked Palmer inside my closet after we separated out the goods. I didn't really want to be alone with them when they opened the bags and saw what we got for them to wear, so I was glad when the convict-striped Joey appeared down the hallway walking toward my open door. "Joey!" I called, and he came over. "You're not going like that, are you, Ryan Dean?" he said. I just gave Joey a dirty look, but I noticed as Casey eyed him, then looked back at me, back and forth, like he was watching a tennis match or something, and I wanted to say, "Dude, you have it so fucking wrong about me and Joey, you stupid moron." But it was so obvious what he was thinking. He was burning up. I could see him turning red, how his hands shook, like he was actually jealous of me, in a totally obviously gay way, too. I couldn't decide whether it was funny, scary, or what. I pulled the wild boy leopard skin up over my legs and tied the single strap on my shoulder. I had to tie it pretty loose because the fake jagged cut bottom barely covered my nuts. I thought it was perfect. "Oh, yeah, Annie will dig this," I said, hoping that Casey was paying attention to the fact that I wasn't talking about a guy. I slipped my bare feet into my running shoes and walked past Joey. "I'm going to go get some hair gel from Kevin." And as I left, I heard Chaz saying, "I'm not putting that shit on." And Casey complaining, "Is that all you fucking got me?" So I guess they weren't totally satisfied with their outfits. But they put them on anyway, and I don't know why Casey Palmer had to tag along with us either. He could have gone out with Nick or any of the other assholes from O'Hall, but he was making it so obvious, to Joey and me at least, that he had some kind of perverted interest in hanging around us. Casey Palmer was after something. What a fucking dolt. Chaz looked especially ridiculous. We didn't really think about it that night in Bannock, but not too many women come in size 6'4", so he had to cut the feet out of the pantyhose just to get the crotch past his knees. Then he had his own pair of Pokemon briefs on top of the red nylons. I said, "Oh, twinsies!" And I lifted up my loincloth. Chaz flipped me off. He wore our blue rugby socks to cover the holes at his feet, then a white t-shirt we had marked up with a big blue C, and finally the cape, which, since it was for a kid, went down to just the top of his ass. Yeah, Joey confirmed what I sensed all along. You couldn't get much gayer looking than that. Kevin looked great. He was all in black with that hook hand sticking out from his sling. Of course, he had an eye patch, and he tied his hair down under a do-rag made from an old black t-shirt. It was a big deal for Kevin to do that, because his perfect blonde hair was always, well, perfect. Kevin Cantrell had magic hair. It never even got messed up playing rugby, and he hated wearing anything that would put one strand out of place. Then he had a three-pointed pirate hat on top of the do-rag, and he'd even taken a black Sharpie and drawn a mustache that was about half as thick as Isabel's, across his lip. Kevin was a great sport. He would do anything, even if it meant permanent marker to the face. He even offered to draw chest and leg hairs on the wild boy of Bainbridge Island. But the whole permanent ink thing was a deal-breaker as far as I was concerned. Casey Palmer just moped along with us, stung and angry, wearing that cheesy elastic band, highly flammable, carcinogenic plastic Wonder Woman mask, and dangling about a yard and a half long cord of gold lame from his right hand. And on that long walk across campus from O'Hall to the dance, I kept wondering the same few things over and over. First, why the hell is Casey tagging along with us, and who is going to be the one to orchestrate the ditching of his ass? Second, it is really, really cold walking around practically naked. And oh, by the way, third, it feels like my balls have turned into frozen raisins and the skin on my one exposed nipple is shriveled to the size of, something that's really small and round and hard or something. Brr! And I didn't even think the whole way over there that they weren't going to let the O'Hall boys into the dance once we got there. But that's exactly what was going to happen. "Ryan Dean West? What are you doing out?" That old pervert, Mr. Wellens, was working the door. He added, "Fantastic costume, by the way." Yeah, whatever, stop staring at my shrunken nipple. But I knew Mr. Wellens liked me. I could lay it on so thick when I wrote essays for him, and of course, I had the highest grade in his lit class. I knew exactly what he wanted to hear. Duh. Sex. Why don't other kids get that? It's never about what you think. It's about what the professor wants you to think. No brainer.
But you boys are going to get into trouble for being out of Opportunity Hall.
I knew I had to work my magic. Anyway, my eyes were watering already. I really did need to pee, even though I thought it would probably come out in sharp yellow ice cubes. Ouch. Thinking about that made my eyes water even more.
They gave us permission at O-Hall to come out tonight, I said. Because we've been very good, Mr. Wellens. You could call over and ask Mrs. Singer and she'll confirm it.
Mr. Wellens looked like a judge weighing character reference testimony. I was shivering. I said,
Oh, and I have my final essay for you on In Our Time.
And I knew this was a kill shot.
I wrote it on the sexual tension between Nick and Bill in The 3-Day Blow.
Yeah, I know, too easy with a title like that, but I wasn't going to go there. I continued.
I mean, how they get drunk together, alone, in the cabin, and Nick puts on a pair of Bill's socks, and Bill tells Nick how he's glad Nick didn't get married, very thick with the taboo of forbidden, unacted upon, and unrequited homosexual curiosity, I think.
I swear to God, Mr. Wellens looked so emotionally moved, I thought he was going to start sobbing.
You are brilliant, Ryan Dean.
I just made that shit up on the spot because of how much I had to pee and how much I wanted into the dance.
Ugh.
Now I knew I'd have to go hammer out that crappy essay before lit class. Sorry, Hemingway, but this old guy murdered some of your best chops for a generation of students.
Mr. Wellens said, Well, it does sound to me as though you boys have been applying yourselves. Have a good time at the dance, Ryan Dean, and I'll look forward to seeing that essay tomorrow.
Crap. Forbidden and unacted upon. Sometimes I surprise myself by how much of an idiot I am. Chapter 87 In the door, high fives from Joey and Kevin, for playing Mr. Wellens like one of those balsa wood paddle and a red bouncy ball attached on a long rubber band with a staple in it that I don't know what the hell they're called things. And, first stop, urinals. So I'm standing there thinking, hey, wearing a miniskirt really does save a lot of time and trouble when a guy needs to pee. Convenient. When I come out into the dance hall, I find Joey and Kevin, but Casey and Chaz were gone, thankfully. It was hard to recognize anyone else because I didn't know what kids were wearing what costumes, and the place was so dark and crowded. I decided I'd have to do my duty and fully check out every single girl there, and potentially every cross-dresser, until I found Annie. I swung past Joey and Kevin and said, I'm going to look for Annie. I'll see you guys later. Whatever you do, try to ditch Palmer for good. Joey smiled and nodded. Kevin leaned to my ear and said,
Oh, I don't think Palmer is going to be around us after what Joey just said to him.
I looked at Joey.
What did you say to him?
Nothing, Joey said. Don't worry about it. Go find your girlfriend. Later, I found out from Kevin that Joey told Casey Palmer straight out that there were plenty of gay kids at Pine Mountain, and that Casey needed to stop hitting on him, and that Joey would be happy to introduce him to some of the other gay boys around school. He said it loud enough that people heard it. Chaz Becker, in his permanent state of cluelessness, didn't realize that Joey Cosentino was not joking. A girl from the soccer team, wearing a grass skirt, glided up to Kevin and started cooing over his stab wound. Yeah, it was the whole stitches thing with some of these girls. Next thing I saw, Kevin had his hook looped into the top of her skirt, and she was leading him out to dance. The dance floor was crowded with kids dressed in every imaginable disguise. A few of them wore school clothes, which, I guess, was a kind of costume in itself, because there wasn't much sense in bothering to pack a Halloween costume for incarceration at Pine Mountain. Still, I was glad for mine, especially when I'd get the incidental brush-up from a girl. It was by far the best costume there. The air in the room was thick and humid. I waded out through the pulsing, vibrating crowd. I saw Shawnee sitting down on a giant L-shaped sofa next to Isabel. They were drinking sodas. I knew I'd never find him dancing. He was so uptight about stuff like that. And, of course, Shawnee was dressed like a flasher, wearing a long yellow raincoat with what looked like nothing on underneath it. Isabel seemed more than a little uncomfortable next to him, and kept an obvious gap between them open on the couch. I figured Shawnee had already played the want-to-see-what-I-have-underneath-my-raincoat game with her. Isabel was dressed like an octopus or something. I didn't really get it, but she had a lot of arms. Oh, and a mustache, which I still found kind of hot. Hey, Shawnee. Shawnee practically jumped when he saw me.
Hi, Ryan Dean, Isabel said. Awesome costume.
Thanks. I gave her a little flex and showed some thigh.
How'd you get in? Shawnee asked.
They let us out of O'Hall. Hey, can I sit down for a second? Shawnee, always uncoordinated with things like that, scooted over to give me space between him and his date. Whatever. I sat. One of Isabel's stuffed arms brushed up along my bare leg. I looked at her, then at Shawnee. I came to apologize to you again, Shawnee. And I'm going to apologize to JP, too. I know we're probably never going to be friends again, not like we were. But I'm sorry for starting a fight and then getting you caught in the middle of it. I held out my hand and Shawnee took it. I could tell by the way he squeezed that everything was okay with him. Guys can just tell things about other guys with the pressure of a handshake. Too tight and you're a competitive asshole. Not tight enough or cold and moist. You probably spend a lot of time looking at porn sites. It's a science.
We'll always be friends, Ryan Dean.
Thanks. Then Shawnee said,
Why do I suddenly feel like we should go back to your place and make out or something? Isabel coughed. She didn't guess Shawnee at all.
I don't even know why she came out with him in the first place.
Shawnee said, JP isn't here. He didn't come. He stayed at home pouting.
That sucks, I said. Because of me. Is Annie here?
Shawnee looked around. She's here somewhere. She's kind of pouty, too.
What's she dressed like?
A doctor.
Oh, score.
Hi, Ryan Dean.
Mrs. Kurtz appeared before us, obviously surprised to see an O'Hall boy at the dance. Then she leaned over to Shawnee and whispered something to him, which I thought was pretty weird, and he laughed. Mrs. Kurtz straightened up and gave me a wink, then disappeared into the crowd of dancers.
What was that all about? I said. Shawnee said, She told me to tell you, Pokemon, if you're going to sit on the couch, maybe you should cross your legs or something.
Then Shawnee leaned forward, looked up my loincloth, and said,
Yep. You want to know how come I know you're gay?
Because guys who check out other guys' balls just kind of do know that stuff? I guessed.
Yeah, it was back to normal with Shawnee. But I still didn't cross my legs. Whatever.
What guy crosses his legs? I saw Megan in the crowd dancing by herself, or at least it looked like she was dancing by herself. She could have been dancing with 100 people for all I knew, and damn, she looked good. She was dressed like a stewardess, complete with that little angel food cake-shaped hat pinned at a tilt in her fluttering hair. She had been watching me. I stood up.
We'll have to make out later, Shawnee, I said.
I'm going to cruise around and try to find Annie. Of course, that wasn't completely a lie. Well, the making out part was.
Shawnee said, It's a date.
So I moved out into the dancers, watching Megan, who was looking right at me. I reasoned that Halloween was going to turn out to be some kind of Ryan Dean West 12-step and apologized to everyone whose feelings I've hurt night. Shawnee made one down. Now I had the rest of the fucking planet to go. Then Mrs. Kurtz hip-bumped me, the way people did when they danced at disco in the 70s. Two things. One, are you kidding me? And two, that was incredibly hot. Plus, she had just been looking at my underwear, which made me feel warm and, kind of springy. So I leaned closer to her ear, since the music was blaring, and I said, "I apologize for how I was sitting over there, Mrs. Kurtz. It was rude. I've never worn a skirt before." And she high-fived me and said, "Ryan Dean, you are adorable." The jury's still out on that word. I really don't think I like it much. Mrs. Kurtz danced off, and I snaked through the flailing bodies. But there,